The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Cindy Fowler from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from HGTV's Gardens e-newsletter, the National Gardening Association e-newsletter, 1001 Hints and Tips for Your Garden by Reader's Digest, the Triangle Gardener Magazine, and the Dave's Garden e-newsletter, and maybe from the Quote Garden website. And we will start with 1001 Hints and Tips for Your Garden. This will be things that you can do for your garden in November. For trees and shrubs, stake new trees high on the trunk. Tie them loosely as possible to encourage wind movement while still protecting them from damage. And keep planting woody ornamentals. Control scale insects on the backs of the leaves of broad-leaved evergreens by spraying with dormant oil. Take a garden inventory and remove plants that have not performed well. For your annuals, protect tender plants from frost in colder areas to extend blooming. Remove all spent and frost-damaged plants and prepare the soil for winter and spring planting. Add all weeds and disease-free plant material to the compost pile. Take cuttings from or move indoors any plants to be saved or overwintered. For perennials and bulbs, sow seeds for spring planting. Finish planting your spring flowering bulbs. Clean up after any frost in colder areas, adding disease-free plant materials to the compost pile. Fill in with hardy annuals for winter display and watch for signs of pests and diseases. For your roses, take cuttings for propagation. Transplant rooted cuttings from last year. Plant pansies and violas in the rose beds for winter color. Plant early spring flowering bulbs in the rose beds. For vegetables and herbs, harvest new potatoes by carefully digging near the surface. Save the deeper tubers for mature harvest in December. Watch for cabbage loopers. Add leaves, grass clippings, and manure to the compost pile and turn it every 2 weeks. Add more manure and water if the pile won't heat up. Foliar feed fall vegetables and herbs with a hose-end fertilizer sprayer. For tomatoes, be prepared to protect plants from early frost. Harvest fruit as soon as it turns pink to limit insect and bird damage. Continue adding to the compost pile and turn it every 2 weeks. Add more manure and water if it won't heat up. Watch for leaf-footed stink bugs. Plant empty areas with a cover crop of rye or oats to discourage nematodes. And for lawns, apply fertilizer to Bermuda grass if not done already. Mow only as needed. Water if conditions are dry, particularly if the lawn was overseeded with perennial rye grass. Rake up leaves and other debris as needed. For your patio and container plants, monitor the plants daily for water needs and pest control. Pinch back and deadhead as needed. Continue planting cool season annuals and replacing trees and shrubs as needed. And from Dave's Garden e-newsletter, fall colors are funny. They're so bright and intense and beautiful. It's like nature is trying to fill you up with color, to saturate you, so you can stockpile it before winter turns everything muted and dreary. Sibon's Vivian said that. Now, identifying wild plants, Sumac, Glorious Fall Color by Melody Rose. Many cultivated plants can trace their roots to common roadside wildflowers and shrubs. Gardeners often assume that the wild or native form is simply an escapee from someone's garden. These wildlings are frequently overlooked and deserve more attention than they get. They're tough, hard to kill, and come with the added benefit of being attractive to bees, butterflies, and wildlife. One of the first plants to wrap itself in an autumn cloak is sumac. These small, shrubby, tree-like plants are often considered weeds and undesirable, but they can offer some of the most wonderful fall color to ever grace a garden. They are great for stabilizing slopes and make a good informal hedge if planted in groups. When the plants are in bloom, hundreds of insects, from butterflies and bees to pollen-eating beetles, converge upon the pretty, upright blooms to partake in their goodness. Sumac of any species is an excellent choice for a wildlife garden. Songbirds love the berries and are often seen picking through the clusters in the dead of winter. Sumac is often found in shaggy fence rows and at the edges of hardwood forests, since the seeds are often spread by birds. The slender trunks frequently grow in grotesque shapes and unusual forms, which tends to frustrate gardeners who prefer military precision. But those of us who embrace the unusual are quite pleased with their quirky forms. The compound leaves often grow between 12 inches and 12 feet and 18 inches and droop from the stems in an attractive manner. Generally unnoticed through most of the season, sumac does not stand out from the crowd until autumn arrives. Seemingly overnight, the green leaves change to a startling crimson that seems to glow with an inner light. Those of us lucky enough to have it growing wild find it a lovely, bright spot in a rapidly changing landscape. I love watching it for it in late summer along the roadways. The shining sumac, or winged sumac, is one of the most common sumacs in the eastern U.S. and can grow to about 30 feet tall in ideal conditions, though much smaller specimens are more common. They're easy to prune to smaller shapes if you need to control their size. In western Kentucky, we also have smooth sumac and staghorn sumac. All are small, tree-like shrubs that boast some vivid autumn colors. Used by Native Americans in a number of ways, sumac was an important part of their lives. They crushed the berries to make a tart drink that was similar to lemonade, and the bark was used in tanning hides, while the roots produced a lovely yellow dye. It was also a part of their herbal pharmacy, and they used parts of this plant to treat various ailments, from ringworm and hemorrhoids to bleeding gums. The leaves were also gathered in the fall once they changed to red to be mixed with their tobacco as a flavoring. The only sumac to be wary of is poison sumac, which can be identified by its white berries and its love for wet and boggy conditions, not to be confused with the white or cream-colored flowers of the shining sumac. Some species of sumac were used in place of lemons in parts of Europe and the Middle East. The berries were soaked in water, crushed, and strained to produce a tart flavoring favored in many recipes. There are 35 species of sumac worldwide, and this relative of the cashew is a familiar plant in the herbal lore of many cultures. Sumac is not picky about soil or fertilizer. In fact, it seems to prefer waste areas and sandy clay. It is drought tolerant and somewhat resistant to deer and rabbits. It grows well in full sun to part shade, and about the only thing it does not like is wet feet. Sumac laughs at harsh conditions, and few pests bother it. It is an excellent understory plant for the edges of a woodland garden, because it tends to have thin branches and unusual shapes anyway. Planted alongside more robust trees like oaks and maples, it adds to the texture of a garden without overpowering the landscape. It can get a little weedy with unwanted seedlings, so if you find more than you want popping up, just snip the berry bunches before they mature. It is a trade-off with the birds, and in my experience, they generally clean up most of the seeds without any help from me, leaving only a few wayward seedlings to sprout each spring. I leave the seed pods for them, and they keep my insect population in check. Several commercial sources offer various species, and there are even some cultivated varieties available. The autumn color is unparalleled, and these tough plants require little care. A win-win situation in my book. And now from HGTV Gardens e-newsletter, Favorite Bulb Flowers for Year-Round Color by Julie Martins Forney. Reticulated iris. Easy to overlook, these miniature iris appear in early spring, often when crocus are in flower. The plants are small, 6 inches at most, but boast big color. The landscape use: tuck along the edge of planting beds or paths. Plant in groups to help increase visibility. February Gold Daffodil. This spring favorite opens its cheery blooms as early as February in Zone 7. Look for flowers from March to mid-spring as you head north. Plant in clumps of 6 for impact. Use in woodland areas, along border edges, or in front of evergreen shrubs. Siberian Squill. Bright blue blossoms dangle atop 3 to 6 inch stems. Flowers appear in late February to March and provide an early food source for bees. These bulbs naturalize easily to form a blanket of color. Create a living carpet in small lawn areas, beneath trees, or in planting beds. Crown Imperial. Bell-shaped blossoms dangle beneath a tuft of leaves to add a striking, unusual form to the garden. Fritillaria imperialis, Crown Imperial, grows 36 to 48 inches tall and bloom in mid-spring. Lay the hollow-centered bulbs on their sides when planting. Plant in groups of 5 or more for the greatest impact. Globemaster Ornamental Onion. This 5-foot-tall allium stops traffic when it's in full bloom. The spherical flower heads offer a long display in the garden, appearing from late spring to early summer. Spent blooms linger well into winter. Plant in front of shrubs or include in a cottage or cutting garden. Looks best arranged in groups. Martagon Lily. Flower petals recurve beautifully on this lily, appearing in late spring to early summer, depending on the latitude. Stems top out around 4 feet. And can bear upward of a dozen flowers each in shades of pink, gold, or white. Include in a perennial border or butterfly garden. Lily Allen Asiatic Lily. Striking orange flowers with black blotches on petals that still the show when this Asiatic lily bursts into bloom in early to midsummer. Plants grow to 30 inches tall on sturdy stems that do not need staking. Include in cottage or cutting gardens. Plant in groups of 3 or more. Stargazer Oriental Lily. Eye-catching pink blooms boast white-edged petals and an alluring fragrance. This Oriental Lily flowers in mid to late summer. Flowers unfurl atop stems 3 to 4 feet tall. tuck into perennial borders or cutting gardens. Blue Storm Lily of the Nile. Beautiful blue flower clusters appear above a strappy tuft of leaves in this tropical bloomer. Blooms appear in spring in zones where plants are. Tuck into containers in cold zones. Wear hardy, used to edge a patio or a path. Dinner plate dahlias. Individual flowers on these bloomers typically measure from 8 to 10 inches across. Blossoms start opening in midsummer and continue until frost. Plants top out at 8 to 12 inches and definitely benefit from staking. Landscape use include in cutting or cottage gardens. And rubrum, R-U-B-R-U-M, lilies. Striking, white-edged, crimson flowers have recurved petals that peel back from the dangling blooms. This is one of the latest flowering lilies, with blossoms appearing from late summer into fall. Expect 10 to 15 flowers per bulb. Stems grow 5 to 7 feet tall, but do not normally need staking. Include in a perennial or butterfly garden. Autumn crocus. Autumn crocus sends up a tuft of strappy, 10-inch-long leaves in spring, which fade as summer heat arrives. Pink flowers grace the garden in fall. Bulbs need sharp drainage. Tuck into woodland or meadow gardens, or use in areas where fading summer plantings can use a pick-me-up. Spider lily. Red flowers appear atop naked stems in fall. Leaves sprout after the blooms fade and linger through winter. Spider lily grows best in part shade. Mix with perennial ground covers, annuals, or perennials. Grow in pots in zones where the plants aren't hardy. It's hardy in zones 6 to 10. And from the National Gardening Association e-newsletter. All my hurts, my garden spade can heal. And Ralph Waldo Emerson said that. Peonies, plant care and collection of varieties. Peonies are renowned for their large, colorful, bowl-shaped flowers and dark green foliage. Once established, these beauties are some of the longest-lived and most reliable garden plants. Peony varieties with huge double flowers will be the focal point of the garden when they bloom in early summer. Single-flowered types are more subtle and combine well with other perennials. Flower colors include pink, red, white, and yellow, and the plants grow 18 inches to 3 feet tall, depending on the variety. Peonies make an attractive low hedge. However, they can take up to 3 years to mature and do not perform well in hot summer climates. Special features of peonies, their easy care and low maintenance, they're fragrant and good for cut flowers. Choosing a site to grow peonies. Select a site with full sun and moist, well-drained soil. Ongoing care. Apply a thin layer of compost each spring, followed by a 2-inch layer of mulch to retain moisture and control weeds. Water plants during the summer if rainfall is less than 1 inch per week. Stake the fall varieties to keep them upright. After the first killing frost, cut stems back to 1 inch or 2 above the soil line. The first winter, apply a 4 to 6 inch layer of protective mulch after the ground freezes to prevent roots from being heaved out of the ground by alternate freezing and thawing. Once your peonies are established, annual winter mulching is not necessary. Remove this protective mulch in the spring. Planting instructions. Plant container-grown peonies in spring or fall, spacing plants 2 to 3 feet apart. Prepare the garden bed by using a garden fork or toller to loosen the soil to a depth of 12 to 15 inches. Then mix in a 2 to 4 inch layer of compost. Dig a hole twice the diameter of the pot the plant is in. Carefully remove the plant from its container and place it in the hole so the top of the root ball is level with the soil surface. Carefully fill in around the root ball and firm the soil gently. Water thoroughly. Plant bare root peonies in late summer or fall, setting the roots so the buds are no more than 2 inches below the full soil surface. If you plant them deeper, they may fail to bloom. And from the Triangle Gardener magazine, a garden event coming up, Moonlight in the Garden. J.C. Ralston Arboretum at NC State. With Southern Lights of Raleigh and the NC Agricultural Foundation. Limited tickets available. Advanced tickets are recommended. A magical lighting exhibition for the entire family. Live music, food trucks, fire pits, roasted marshmallows. This will happen November the 6th through the 17th at the J.C. Ralston Arboretum, located on Barrel Road in Raleigh. For more information, call 919-513-3132. 919-515-3132. And the Central Carolina Chrysanthemum Society and Duke Gardens present A Festival of Fabulous Mums, November the 4th through the 6th. The hours, 12 to 5 p.m. on Sunday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Tuesday. It's free admission, but parking fees apply. Again, that happens November the 4th through the 6th. At the Doris Duke Center in Duke Gardens at Duke University, on Anderson Street in Durham, North Carolina. And what's the largest terrestrial organism? The giant sequoia? Nope. The African elephant? Not even close. According to the Soil Science Society of America, the largest land organism is a fungus. Those who know soil understand the biodiversity lurking within, and that includes the honey fungus, the largest terrestrial organism. The largest honey fungus identified in North America is in Oregon. It measures 3.4 miles across. Scientists also believe that this particular honey fungus may be over 2,000 years old. The honey fungus gets its size from its ability to fuse into a single organism. When mycelia from a different individual honey fungus bodies meet, they can attempt to fuse to each other. When the mycelia successfully fuse, they link very large fungal bodies together to make an even larger one. And from the Quote Garden website, in making out your garden plan this year, you will probably find yourself handicapped by the lack of accurate knowledge about your plants of last year. How much of each thing you used, the dates of the last frost in the spring and first killing frost in autumn, when the various insect pests appeared, when you made your last sowing for winter vegetables, how long after planting it took the different varieties of vegetables to mature, and a score of other things, all of which you have had to guess at with no degree of certainty. Provide now against next spring. Get a cheap diary. Leave it in the pocket of your work clothes, or hang it up in the tool shed. In it, jot down from time to time the things you particularly want to keep track of. That was done by Frederick Fry Rockwell, Around the Year in the Garden, a seasonable guide and reminder for work with vegetables, fruits, and flowers, and under glass. February, first week, make a plan now and follow it this summer. Keep a garden diary. He said that in 1913. Gardening is the slowest of the performing arts. Author unknown. There is no gardening without humility. Nature is constantly sending even its oldest scholars to the bottom of the class for some egregious blunder. Alfred Austin. Gardeners learn by trowel and error. That's just a gardening saying. The soil is the great connector of our lives, the source and destination of all. Wendell Berry in The Unsettling of America. A cloak of loose, soft material held to the earth's hard surface by gravity is all that lies between life and lifelessness. Wallace H. Fuller in Soils of the Desert Southwest, 1975. Fingers now scented with sage and rosemary. A kneeling gardener is lost in savory memories. Dr. Sunwolf. One of the worst mistakes you can make as a gardener is to think you're in charge. Janet Gillespie said that. When a front yard is converted to a vegetable garden, growing food goes public. Gardens that are visible from the street naturally pique the interest of the community. The result can be that the gardener reconnects with their food and also forges new connections with their neighbors. Some residents may be surprised, even resistant to the idea of a garden that is cultivated out in the open, but as flowers bloom and veggies begin to form, attracting birds, bees, and butterflies, as well as curious neighbors, a tended garden converts a sterile space into a living sanctuary. Most neighbors will grow to appreciate its beauty. A few community members may even jump on board, adding a few edible plants to their own landscapes. That was said by Carrie Spencer for the Micro Farm Project. We've run out of time for today's episode of Out in the Garden. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Cindy Fowler, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleReadingService.org. So long, until the next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.